Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. On this week's program, I'd like to discuss the case of birthright citizenship litigated by the Supreme Court last week, the traditional interpretation of the 14th Amendment by government agencies, has been that anyone born in the United States automatically becomes a U.S. citizen, even the children of illegal aliens. But is that really what the 14th Amendment requires? Do temporary visitors in the United States who bear children during their stay, whether their stay is for 1 year, 1 month, 1 day, or 1 hour, should these babies automatically become United States citizens? Well, many legal scholars say no, the 14th Amendment does not allow for what are called anchor babies, where expecting mothers can slip over the border to birth their children just so their family can have a child who is an American citizen with all the rights and the benefits of American citizenship. Now, practically speaking, all one really needs to know about birthright citizenship to make an informed decision is the fact that across America, there are Chinese maternity houses where Chinese women come on vacation to the United States so that their babies will have U.S. citizenship. Here's an article from NBC News, not Fox News, not Breitbart, not Newsmax, but the left-leaning NBC. Feds raid California maternity hotels for birth tourists. Federal agents in California raided 20 maternity hotels where Chinese women allegedly pay $40,000 to $80,000 to give birth in the U.S. for U.S. citizenship. Quote, the organizers who ran one of these sites, Chao Chen and Dong Li, used a website to drum up business touting the benefits of a child with U.S. citizenship. 13 years of free education, low-cost college financial aid, less pollution, and a path for the entire family to emigrate when the child becomes an adult. Clients are counseled on what lies to tell to obtain a tourist visa, how to fly through Hawaii, Las Vegas, or Korea to avoid suspicious immigration officers at the LA International Airport, and how to disguise their pregnancy in transit. Now, it may seem from this article that these are women who want to escape China for political freedom, but the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, is also paying for and encouraging this practice so they can create a pool of future CCP operatives that can infiltrate into the United States. You know, we're the only country in the world that allows this practice, and our enemies are laughing at us. Now, the purpose of this program, God and Country, is to discuss the spiritual, moral aspects of any event or news story. So does the Bible have anything to say about birthright citizenship? Does God give some intrinsic moral right to citizenship in some nation based upon the physical location of one's birth? Or is citizenship to be based upon parental citizenship? Well, just in the example of biblical Israel, the right of a child to be a citizen of Israel was based solely upon parentage. You know, just because an Edomite or a Moabite or a Philistine bore a child in the Israeli territory didn't make that child a citizen of Israel with all of the Israeli land rights. And this is somewhat obvious. I mean, you could imagine Israel's enemies occupying a territory of Israel and then claiming that all of their children are Israeli citizens? Well, of course not. Citizenship was always based upon parental lineage. And this is the way citizenship has traditionally worked in all nations. National boundaries were based on family lines divided up at the Tower of Babel, Acts chapter 17, verse 26, or Genesis chapter 10, verse 32. These are the families of the sons of Noah according to their genealogies. By their nations, and out of these nations, they were separated on the earth after the flood. Now, of course, allowances were made for foreigners to become citizens of Israel. But that wasn't a birthright. That was a privilege granted by the state to adults who met certain qualifications. In regard to birthright citizenship, the text that comes to mind is Acts chapter 22. And Paul's discussion about his citizenship with a Roman soldier. Be patient here. I have to read the whole text so we get the context. Acts chapter 22, verse 24. The commander ordered Paul to be brought back into the barracks, stating that he should be examined by scourging so that he might find out the reason why they were shouting at him or against him in that way. But when they stretched him out with thongs, Paul said to the centurion who was standing by, "Is it lawful for you to scourge a man who is a Roman and yet uncondemned?" When the centurion heard this, he went to the commander and told him, saying, "What are you about to do? For this man is a Roman." The commander came and said to Paul, "Tell me, are you a Roman?" And Paul answered, "Yes." The commander answered, "You know, I acquired this citizenship with a large sum of money." And Paul said, "But I was actually born a citizen." Therefore, those who were about to examine him immediately let him go. And the commander was also afraid when he found out that he was a Roman and because he had put him in chains. So the point is that Roman citizens were given certain due process rights, which is exactly the same way it is today in every country. In America, U.S. citizens are given more due process rights than foreigners. You know, apparently, Paul's parents were Roman citizens. And also remember, he was Paul of Tarsus, not Paul of Jerusalem or Paul of Israel. His family was from the Roman city of Tarsus in modern-day Turkey. But notice the point of the text is the value that is placed on Roman citizenship. So much so that this Roman commander was willing to pay a large sum of money for citizenship. You know, just like in the United States, under the EB-5 visa program, if you have a green card and you're working in the United States, if you pay $1 million, you can have a 2-year path to citizenship. Well, is that unjust? Well, not really. The government isn't opening the doors to everyone in the world, but looking for those who are committed and are willing to make a contribution to the country. Besides, regular green card holders can also become citizens for free. It just takes a little while longer. But notice in all this, what are people striving for? A safe haven, a place where there is productivity and wealth. Because if you're living in a third world country, you may be productive, but if your people are not productive, then that will greatly hinder your success and productivity. Because there are few customers. Because the citizenship as a whole is not productive. Romans chapter 14, verse 7, "No man lives to himself and no man dies to himself." We all have an economic and moral influence on each other, in our community, in our nation. Also, Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 18, "One sinner destroys much good," and hence brings down the economic welfare and the safety of everyone. So wealth goes to wealth, success goes to success. Nobody has ever gotten a job from a poor person. So people want to join themselves to productive people and to productive nations. In essence, people are looking to join those who are blessed of God, whether they realize it or not. Or rather, they want to join those nations that are exalted temporarily in the program of God. And often people want the blessings of God without the God of the blessings, but still they're looking for whatever blessings can be found in this world. The best life now. In 2 Chronicles 15, we read about the religious reforms and the successes of King Asa in the southern kingdom of Judah. And because of this, many Jews from northern Israel, from the tribes of Ephraim, Manasseh, Simeon, defected to Judah because they saw that the Lord was with King Asa And in northern Israel, there was political turmoil, and the kings were doing evil in the sight of the Lord. So, in the ancient world, as it is today, people gravitate toward centers of power and wealth. Whether the motives are for good or for evil, you know, they gravitate toward the empires of Rome, Greece, Persia, Babylon, Egypt. Remember in Revelation chapter 18, verse 9, when Babylon the Great, the capital of the Antichrist, falls, all the merchants of the earth weep and mourn because no one buys their cargo anymore. So before we even discuss the laws of the land concerning what constitutes legal citizenship and legal immigration, the spiritual lesson here involves what are people looking for in this life? How people move to places where they believe there will be success and wealth, and how actually they may be barking up the wrong tree. The real nation or the kingdom that people should be seeking is the kingdom of Christ, not looking to man and to the nations, because that kind of deliverance is in vain. Psalm chapter 60, Psalm 146, do not trust in princes or in mortal man in whom there's no salvation. And not only would God have these people first seek the kingdom of Christ, but I suspect God would also have them stay as missionaries to help their own people rather than running away. Just like Lot made a big mistake in moving to Sodom because he saw that Sodom was prosperous, or Demas having forsaken Paul because he loved this present world. Now, of course, there are cases where there is legitimate immigration. As Jesus himself said, if they persecute you in one city, flee to the next. And that's why in America we have refugee status for those who are truly being persecuted for the faith. And even the Apostle Paul was able to utilize his Roman citizenship to advance the gospel. But the spiritual lesson is that people need to be operating first on God's higher values, rather than automatically assuming that they have a right to be in whatever country they want to be in. And people ought to be operating on higher values than money and self-centered gain. Righteous law is not based upon what enriches you. The real issue behind those who are protesting for open borders and the constitutional right for birthright citizenship for illegals is their belief in human autonomy. That you should be able to get what you want because human choice and autonomy should come above any law concerning national sovereignty, national borders, or any belief that a nation needs to be limited to a group. And I discussed this last week in regard to lower court judges placing an injunction on Trump's immigration policies. They are fighting the current administration because of their ideological moral belief in human autonomy. The foundation for their moral understanding of right and wrong is man himself. What people want and desire comes first. Human desire is above law, and freedom to do your own thing becomes the basis for justice. Hence, operating on this foundation, they see themselves as saints and crusaders for justice and human rights, but all along they're violating the higher laws of God. And as far as protesters on the street, they may not have a well thought out ideology, but they're simply mad that they or others aren't allowed to do what they want to do. And that's their basis for morals and ethics. So they believe, of course, there should be anchor babies and birthright citizenship because people want it, and it benefits them. And so how could people be denied what they want to do? And so people who think this way also become allies to abortionists and transgenders and homosexuals and also illegal immigrants, because they don't want to be told what to do, and they don't want others to be told what to do. So for those who apostate from Christianity, human autonomy comes above any law of the land, And most of those laws are based upon Christian values and truth, the law of nature and nature's God, such as the fact that nations need to have borders and nations are made up of a distinct group of people. But these people despise boundaries. Deuteronomy chapter 27, cursed is he who removes the ancient boundaries. Anyway, that's the spiritual lesson in this whole story. People operating on the wrong basis for determining right and wrong. So now let's talk about the legal issues in the court case. But in this, let's not forget that all of the legal ramblings and the jargon are simply a reflection of deeper worldview beliefs. Now, this is why all of these leftist Supreme Court justices who are pro-abortion, pro-LGBT, are also pro-illegal immigration and pro-birthright citizenship, because they're operating on the moral ideology of the atheistic Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, which is taught in ungodly universities. As Holmes said, quote, law is arrived at by the dominant forces of the community, basically what the community wants, rather than some mysterious omnipresence in the sky. So man's desires become the basis for law. And this is why there is a worldview cultural war in the courts today. It all boils down to a belief in God or disbelief. Anyway, in regard to the case heard last week by the Supreme Court, what the court heard now were arguments concerning whether there should be an injunction allowed stopping President Trump's executive order to end birthright citizenship, whether the lower courts have the right to issue an injunction to stop the president's executive order and his claim that the Constitution does not support birthright citizenship for illegals. So right now, the issue before the court is this temporary injunction. The case of birthright citizenship will be addressed in the 2026 Supreme Court session. The question is whether Trump's case is so weak and it creates so much harm that the lower court has the right to issue an injunction ordering the administration to cease the executive order. And this alone is a big case, because if the Supreme Court gives lower courts the right to issue injunctions against the executive branch of government over any law these lower judges don't like, then these lower court judges have more power over the country than our elected representatives. The courts run the country. And that's not the system our founding fathers established in the Constitution. Now, throughout American history, nationwide injunctions from lower courts were unheard of. But in 2017, the left began to use them to stop Trump at all costs. 35 of the 39 total universal injunctions issued against the Trump administration have come from the same five courts. The left has shopped the 650 lower court federal judges to find the ones they know will rule against Trump. Hans von Kofsky at the Heritage Foundation said, quote, if the government loses this particular issue, it's like opening the gates to a rock concert and letting the crowd rush in without giving tickets. It's going to mean that these judges all over the country can continue to issue these nationwide injunctions against almost any executive order. So Trump has to win this case, or his agenda is over, and the leftist court judges rule the country. So there's that issue of the lower court injunctions, and that could be a program in itself. But still, the issue of birthright citizenship was discussed, in the court case, because the legitimacy of these injunctions against Trump hinge on whether Trump could be successful in his challenge to the birthright citizenship interpretation of the 14th Amendment. Okay, so did you get all that? Now, in order for you to be fully informed, let's go ahead and look at the 14th Amendment situation. The argument against birthright citizenship is best summed up in an amicus brief sent to the Supreme Court by John Eastman and his organization, the Constitutional Council Group. Eastman is a serious Christian patriot. He has been attacked by the left for his support of Trump. He was disbarred by the California Bar Association for suggesting that the election in 2020 could be contested by Congress. Well, Eastman begins his brief by pointing out that the Supreme Court needs to clarify birthright citizenship and return the country to the original intent of the founders and the actual meaning of the 14th Amendment, which does not support birthright citizenship for illegals. The 14th Amendment reads, "All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States." The amendment was about, after the Civil War, allowing slaves in the South that were living in the United States to become citizens of the United States. The phrase, "subject to the jurisdiction thereof," is ambiguous, but in 1870, it referred to people who have been living in America under its jurisdiction, not people who are illegals who have citizenships in other countries. You know, the concept of being under the jurisdiction of the United States doesn't mean all one must do is walk over into U.S. territory and therefore you're under their jurisdiction. No, it meant that you have to be part of the nation. Eastman goes on to explain that the Supreme Court has already addressed the meaning of the 14th Amendment citizenship clause in prior cases, and nowhere has the court ruled that children born to illegal aliens or to temporary visitors in the United States are citizens. Birthright citizenship for illegals is not settled. It's not dicta, despite what Democrat lawyers are saying. Now, the first case cited in support of birthright citizenship for illegals is the 1898 Wong Kim Ark case. That case was a very narrow ruling. Kim's parents had, quote, permanent domicile and residence in the United States, even though they were from China. They were not here illegally. This ruling really shouldn't apply to non-domicile illegal parents. Domicile is the same constitutional concept as under the jurisdiction thereof, which means a permanent submission to a sovereign authority, which is fundamentally different from a transient, limited connection of a mere sojourner. Being subject to the jurisdiction thereof doesn't mean you can just drop a baby on the ground and it becomes a citizen. You can't break the law and then claim a benefit from the law. If you submit yourself to the jurisdiction of the United States by applying for and being granted legal citizenship, then you can have a baby that's a citizen of the United States. But you're not under its jurisdiction if you're here illegally and you haven't applied for and haven't been granted legal citizenship. So by definition, illegals are not acting under the jurisdiction of the United States. Eastman points out that both the lower courts and the plaintiffs misconstrue the scope of the Kim case. The second case that is often cited to prove birthright citizenship is Murray versus Schooner Charming Betsy of 1804. And it was a case about Jared Shattuck, who was born in Connecticut before the American Revolution. So he's a British citizen who received American citizenship with his parents after the Revolutionary War. The issue was whether he was still a citizen of the United States since he had temporarily moved to the British island of St. Thomas. So the case really had nothing to do with birthright citizenship. It had to do with, are you still a citizen if you temporarily leave the United States? Well, Eastman then goes on to explain how the plaintiffs misread many other cases and commentaries to allege birthright citizenship for illegals and vacationers. But then Eastman provides an argument that I've never heard. The American Revolution rejected the doctrine of birthright citizenship as found in English common law, in favor of citizenship based upon mutual consent and allegiance. Our American Constitution was opposed to the feudal notion of birthright subjectship. That is, if you're born in the king's territory, you are a subject of the king, like it or not. That's English common law. By mere accident of your birth, you were under the King of England. You were under its allegiance. You were its servant. And citizenship was based solely on the geography of one's birth. And the people in the Middle Ages despised the idea of birthright citizenship because it meant being a servant to a king that you could never leave. It was like the Soviet Iron Curtain. And the American founders wanted citizenship based on a person's choice and the mutual agreement of the citizens of that country. So birthright citizenship is antithetical to the American mind. Rights and allegiances were not to be forced on people by the accidental location of their birth, but instead by the choice of the individual and the consent of the public. Now, this is kind of deep, but if you want to get into this, you can check out this YouTube by the lawyer Robert Goivea. But the question everyone still has is, if the 14th Amendment and the Supreme Court never supported or ruled for birthright citizenship for illegals or temporary visitors, how come it's become the default position despite what the law actually reads? I mean, why do the lower courts claim that it's a given? Well, because it was never a major problem until illegals started coming into our country to have anchor babies. So previously, the whole issue was really ignored. In the past, there wasn't a substantial number of pregnant women coming to America just to have babies because there were so many other legal obstacles to their entrance. But now the system's being overwhelmed. Also, the federal bureaucracy is lazy. If a child has a birth certificate from a location in the United States, in order to question or to challenge it, it would take a serious investigation and a lengthy court case. It's just so much easier to send out a Social Security card to those who present a U.S. birth certificate from some U.S. hospital. Even with Trump's new executive order eliminating birthright citizenship for illegals, a whole new system is going to have to be put in place to verify the background of those receiving birth certificates from hospitals. So why not just continue to do what we've always been doing? Again, because now we have a problem. Because now we have an invasion of illegal migrants and Chinese maternity houses in the United States. Now, the final takeaway here is just to remember that God's higher laws for the nations needs to come above our feelings. There are even professing Christians that we run into that base their morals and their politics on their feelings, on the belief that people just ought to be free and autonomous, to be allowed to do whatever affirms them. So when they're asked about this issue, they will say, well, I think these babies born in America to illegal immigrants should be American citizens, well, because it's just a nice thing to do, and that's what people want. Well, that's not only an Antichrist ideology, but that's an ideology that seriously hurts people in the long run. Psalm 119:66. Teach me good discernment and knowledge, for I believe in your commandments. Thanks for listening. Be a person of the word. Subscribe, like, share, leave a comment below to help the cause. And may Jesus Christ reign.